perfect for you. He's a seldom met with. Even in 100,000 year it compass. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
This is the Buddha. This is the Dharma. This is the Sangha. This morning we're celebrating the festival of Great Master Dogen. I've been doing talks on the master-disciple relationship. It seems appropriate to look at some of the things that he had to say about the master-disciple relationship. One of the things that is very notable in Dogen's teachings is his profound respect for the ancient way of the Buddha's ancestors. Great Master Dogen lived from 1200 to 1253 in Japan, A.D. And that's about 800 years ago. And that seems like a very long time ago. But it's important to understand that when he was alive, Buddhism was very ancient already. Was already in the neighborhood of 1600 to 1700 years old as a religion. In addition, Dogen had a profound sense of the eternal foundation of the path. That it is in fact beginningless and endless. So there are two aspects to this reverence for the ancient way. The more readily comprehended by most people senses has to do with reverence for a path that was at his time of the time of his life was already an ancient path in human terms. And the deeper reverence is a reverence for the path in its aspect of eternity. That in reality there is no beginning and no end. That manifests, expresses itself in myriad ways through myriad ages and in myriad worlds. And you see this expressed in many of the Mahayana sutras, which were so dear to Dogen and so many others. In the most excellent Mir Samadhi, there is the line, if you in ancient footsteps wish to walk, observe examples old. For us, the age of Dogen is an ancient age now, 800 years ago. So we can't do better than to observe what he has to say about the master-disciple relationship. in Gyakudo Dyojinshu, aspects of Zazen, aspects of meditation, he says, "They who have spent much time in worldly or scriptural study should visit a Zen training center. Many have already done so. Bodhidharma taught the clever Deshi, known as Nangaku, whilst Daikan Enno taught Yoka Genkaku." Clever is not a term of praise. You might as well be saying here, even though Nangaku was clever, he was able to train with Bodhidharma. He goes on to say, "To make the truth clear and enter the way, one must study with a Zen master. One must never try to bring a Zen master's teaching down to one's own level of understanding. For should one try to understand it from one's own self-opinionated viewpoint, one will never understand. Before asking for the truth from a master, you must make your body and mind pure and quieten your perceptions so that both eyes and ears perceive and hear in peace. Simply listen to the teaching and do not allow it to become soiled by your own thoughts. Your body and mind must be as one with each other as water is poured from one bowl to another. If you can achieve such a state of body and mind, the truth that the master teaches can be made one with yourself." This is a fundamentally, crucially important point. One of the things one comes to a master for is to actually hear the teaching, to actually take in the teaching. Later one realizes that everything the master does is teaching and can be taken as such and must be taken as such. In the beginning, one tends to be more struck by something in the master's demeanor, the profundity of what is taught. Something triggers a recognition within oneself that here is someone one can train with and take refuge in. And then how one goes about it is crucially important. If one has filled oneself up with opinions about Buddhism, if one has done a good deal of reading, if one has visited various centers and various teachers, if one has engaged in discussions about Buddhism, in order to train with a true teacher, in order to undertake discipleship, all that has to be let go of. And I mean all of it. So that one can simply take in the teaching without running it through a filter of one's own opinions, a filter of one's own inevitably lopsided point of view. When listening to the teaching, it is essential to simply meditate, and that is what he is describing here. Get down out of your head. Don't try to intellectually understand what is said. Simply let it come in through your pores. Breathe it in. Inhale it, as it were, with your whole being. Take it in, then sit with it. Every teacher is human, and everything they do and say in some way expresses their humanity. But if you get stuck in the humanity, you get stuck with the humanity, then the deepest truth will always be being screened through that superficial position that you have taken, the screen of that superficial position that you have taken. Don't worry about how things are expressed. Don't worry about characteristics of the teacher's personality and way of expressing things. Just take in the teaching through your pores. You don't need to try to analyze it. You don't need to try to remember it even if you take it in this way. It will simply go in. The words are a vehicle for something deeper than words. The master, the teacher, is just a vehicle for something deeper. That something deeper is already within you. So the something deeper in the teacher triggers a recognition within you of that something deeper within yourself. I've often told the story of listening to Reverend Master when I was a very new monk talking on Dogen's teaching of Uji, the flow of existence, the flow of immaculacy. And I'd leave that each talk thinking I didn't understand a word she said, and yet I'd feel as if I'd had a full spiritual meal. And in truth, I actually don't remember what she said so many years ago. Yet I clearly remember, and have always remembered, how much those talks meant to me. Was at a deeper level than my head. Something was flowing out of her and triggering something in me that I very much longed for. It was the whole reason I was there. This is how to listen to the teaching. He goes on to say, at the present time, the unwise memorize the scriptures and cling to what they have heard. They try to equate such things with the Master's teaching. In other words, they try to say that such an intellectual understanding can somehow be equal to the true teaching of a true Master. But they actually only rehear their own opinions and those of others, which do not at all equate with the teaching they have just received. They are convinced that their own opinions are right and then memorize a few parts of the scriptures calling this Buddhism. This isn't just a phenomenon of ancient times. This is happening all over America today. Should the teaching you hear from a Zen master go against your own opinions, he is probably a good Zen master. If there is no clash of opinions in the beginning, it is bad. People who are stuck with their own opinions frequently do not know how to get rid of them and so cannot use the teaching given to them. For a long time they suffer from grave confusion and must be regarded with great grief. After all, why would we go to a Zen master if we simply wanted to hear our own opinions and our own views of things confirmed? He goes on to say, presumption, discrimination, imagination, intellect, human understanding, and the like have nothing to do with Buddhism when studying Zen. Too many people are like children, playing with such things from their birth. You must awaken to Buddhism right now. Above all, you must avoid presumption and choice. Reflect carefully upon this. Presumption and choice, willfulness, and picking and choosing. He says, reflect carefully upon this. Only the Zen masters know the gateway to the truth. Professors have no knowledge thereof. Later on in the same chapter, the same lecture, he says, there are two ways in which to set body and mind right. Dogen was always talking about harmonizing body and mind. And this really means, as I've often said, bringing this present body and mind, this little karmic package that we call ourselves, into harmony with the eternal. He says, there are two ways in which to set body and mind right. One is to hear the teaching from a master, and the other is to do pure zazen yourself, to do pure meditation yourself. And these are not two different paths. These are two aspects of one path. If you hear the teachings, the conscious mind is put to work. Whilst meditation embraces both training and enlightenment, in order to understand the truth, you need both. All living beings possess both body and mind, irrespective of strong or weak behavior, for behavior itself is variable. It is by means of the body and mind that we become enlightened, and this is the receiving of the teaching. There is no need to change the present body and mind. All one has to do is follow in the enlightened way of a fine Zen master, for this is the receiving of the teaching directly. To follow a Zen master is not to follow in old ways, nor to create new ones. It is simply just to receive the teaching. This is actually the meaning the deeper meaning of the lines in the Most Excellent Mirror Samadhi, if you in ancient footsteps wish to walk, observe examples old. Because in the end you can't just observe them from the distance of centuries. You have to find someone who is walking in the same path as the ancients walked. And then it is no longer old or new. It is just what it is at this moment. And just what it is in the next moment, and the next, and the next. Once one has found one's true master, and one has completely committed oneself to the way that is being taught and followed by one's true master, then whether one's master is alive or dead, one is always following in the footsteps of one's master. And this not only makes possible the receiving of the teaching, when it is rightly understood, this following is the receiving of the teaching. It is inhaling and exhaling the teaching. It is living the teaching. It is the teaching being one's blood and bones. It is the teaching being one's life and one's death. This has nothing to do with setting up someone as an authority over you or someone trying to be an authority over you. This has nothing to do with worldly plans, worldly opinions, worldly designs, worldly cleverness, worldly ambition. This is just the natural way that manifests throughout the ages when that which is true and real and eternal within one person is recognized by that which is true and real and eternal in another person. To think that we could do away with this, dispense with it and do without it, is to think that somehow we created it in the first place. And we can neither create it nor destroy it. When the master discipleship manifests naturally in human existence, it is a gift from the eternal. We can accept the gift or we can reject it. We don't create it. We can't destroy it.
Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.